Hello everyone and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present and future of all things business and esports. I'm your host, Joe Hills, and today we're going to be focusing on everything mobile in and around games and esports. And to take us on this wonderful journey, we have a previous Esports Roundtable alumni from 1 or 2 weeks ago. Deborah Mensah-Bonsu from Space 8 Games is going to jump on the show and just take us through what her expectations are for how mobile esports in the West will be changing the state of the industry as we know it, and also just some really exciting projects that they're doing at the moment and mobile gaming in a wider sense. So Deborah, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Hey man.
How's it going? You all good?
Yeah, I'm all good over here.
Awesome. So for those that didn't listen to the last episode, just take us all through your story of how you got to where you are today and what your area of responsibility is at the moment.
Cool. Sure. Hey, everyone. I'm Deborah. So my background is actually as a news journalist. I used to live in Canada and worked in journalism for about 7 years as reporter, producer, what have you, in print and radio and TV. So that's my career before gaming, basically. And I moved to London and started to work in console, first at Xbox. I was part of the editorial team there to build the community out for Xbox Upload, which was like a video sharing and editing platform that launched with the Xbox One. And we did a lot with taking members of the community to different conferences and shows and having them interview and sort of like lead the discussions with devs on their favorite games and things like that. So I was at Xbox first, sort of getting, you know, doing reviews and things on all the upcoming games that were launching on the console. Like I said, building out that community of people making content around those games. And then we also made our own content around those games. We held like esports tournaments in our studio as well, and went to tournaments and, you know, I used to interview players and that kind of thing. So I did that for like almost 2 years, and after that I moved to Space 8 where I am now, and I started as the German community manager, actually, funnily enough.
Okay.
Fun fact, I'm German by birth, so that's how I started when our game Rival Kingdoms launched, but then sort of quickly moved into community management in general for the company. Brought live streams to Space Apes. We now run weekly live streams for different titles, sort of depending on whichever one has like the largest community at the time. Yeah, I'm also a big supporter of women in games, naturally. I am a woman. It's nice to see other women in the industry,
just in case anyone hadn't realized yet.
Well, they can't see me, Joe. They don't know.
That's true. That's one massive lacking part of this podcast that we're hoping to change when things get slightly less crazy this year. But yeah.
And I'm also massively into education. Also that cross-section between education and games and education in general. I also volunteer with like a literacy group outside of work with younger kids. And then obviously I know you from Digital Schoolhouse, or not from Digital Schoolhouse, but I recruited you for Digital Schoolhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Recruiting the recruiter.
It's pretty meta. Yeah.
Exactly. And then what else did I do here? So yeah, I basically head up content here at Space Ape, and also am mostly the go-to for most esports related things in our studio, and I recently launched a varsity program here at Space Ape to sort of try to support the future leaders of our industry.
Very, very cool. Yeah, that's been one thing that you and I have been kind of speaking back and forth on over the last few weeks. I think we were throwing around a few names about what this should actually be called. And I don't know how helpful I was, but we'll get into
you
that.
You were somewhat helpful. Yeah, we should come back to that later.
Sometimes you just need to see a lot of things that you don't like, and then you can just refine it down to things that you do like. So a lot of the kind of super B2B names that I was throwing around might not have been right, but we will get to that in a second. So SpaceTape at the moment, from what I understand, in terms of a really aggressive esports proposition, there isn't one yet.
Obviously, I was about to say, what are you talking about?
So from like quite a few of the games that you guys have put out have actually been really well received by the community. Like I'm seeing here that Rival Kingdoms received the Editor's Choice Award from Apple and a bunch of other awards over quite a few others. How does esports actually fit into the proposition with you? Because obviously most of these games are going to have a multiplayer aspect anyway. Is that just going to be bolting on more structures around people playing these titles competitively, or are you looking at the likes of Clash Royale that sold out the Copper Box in London for their World Championships? Like, what's the kind of vision for this year?
Sure. My chair's creaking in the background. I guess I'll tell you a little bit about sort of Space Ape and what our goals sort of in general are, and then how esports kind of fits into that.
Awesome.
So we were founded roughly 6 years ago now. We've got four live titles. Three of them were in the sort of build and battle genre, which we made a name for ourselves in. And then our last one, called Fastlane, is an arcade shooter. And we recently partnered with Supercell, which I'm sure you know, which has been really great for us as well. And now we're really on the hunt for like a genre-defining hit. So we have teams working on like a breadth of different genres, which I can't, you know, really discuss yet. But our strength here at Space Ape is really small, empowered teams. So rather than having, you know, 20 people working one game, we like to silo off into different small teams, so we can try to work and iterate on a lot of different ideas. We call that the Space Ape funnel, for anyone who may not have heard about that before. And one of those games that we're currently developing is a competitive multiplayer title. So we do have, I guess, esports aspirations, I can say. So, you know, we're trying to ensure that our game has the best chance for success in that space. So things like watchability and tournaments and events and, you know, really good player progression and skill cap. But ultimately, at the end of the day, like, it's the community who decides what the focus is going to be, and for us, that's always been the main thing, is just building strong communities, no matter what the title is. So I think I can definitely see an esports future in this competitive title, for sure. It also has like a really cool sports vibe to it, okay, in general. But, you know, what that will look like, I don't know, and especially I think on mobile, the way that esports looks can be different. So, you know, you mentioned Clash Royale. I think a lot of people wouldn't have pinned that as an esports title in the past, but it obviously is one. So I think our definition of what an esports title can look like is changing and it's going to evolve over time as we reach out to different like cross sections of the population as well, because mobile is so accessible. You know, I mean, for the first time it's overtaken PC and console as like the main gaming platform. And I think with that, you get just so many different kinds of people playing games, which means that the way that competition looks could change and the types of games that are going to be competed in will change. So I think that's going to be really, really interesting for mobile, just for accessibility, you know? Plus, you know, we talk a lot about like Eastern influences in the West and that kind of thing. And you can obviously see that in Asia with things like Arena of Valor, just like topping the charts. And you know, our mobile first generation is coming of age as well, so I think you'll see a lot more complexity being a lot more what's the word I'm looking for, I guess more openness to that kind of complexity.
Sure.
On a mobile platform as well. Yeah,
I actually got my hands on the PUBG ripoff, which is spun out of China on the mobile, which I think has about 25 million users already. And I was frankly just shocked with my kind of old man dial-up perspective of like playing on a Game Boy, I actually feel like I'm relatively aged in like in the games industry now. But like seeing just the quality and how well it played and how it wasn't actually that demanding on the handset either, just makes, in my mind, the kind of more pure standard esports titles that we've seen already, actually, you know, like the potential for that mobile is absolutely insane.
Yeah, definitely.
And at the same time, sorry.
No, sorry, no, just the fact that you can, you know, you're not tied to a location, which I think is huge as well. You can like pick up and set up a tournament anywhere if you wanted to, if you're on a mobile device. So I think that also offers huge opportunity.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we were touching on with the digital schoolhouse as well, right? Is that there were lots of issues around actually getting everyone the right spec'd PCs to be running this, and that kind of limited how many kids could be involved. And just overall, I think the quality of the experience and the fact that everyone now has a smartphone in their pocket.
Now what, sorry?
Everyone has a smartphone in their pocket now means that's pretty huge. While I was at the esports bar in February, I was speaking with representatives from India, from South Africa, from New Zealand, and from other areas in South America as well, that were all looking at building an esports community around mobile first, and just how much easier it is to actually access and build a community through that. So it's super exciting. I'm sitting here thinking that I'm always going to be going back to my keyboard and mouse and just being able to kind of sit and focus and like use super competitive gaming as a thing to focus on and actually get better at on my own, just like as a way just to kind of shut down at the end of the day. And I've deliberately stayed away from playing as many mobile games as possible because my phone dies fast enough already with all of the music and podcasts that I listen to, and just, you know, all the emails and everything. So it might not be a thing for me yet, but maybe like in 1 or 2 years when there's some amazing mobile titles that really blow me away, that I'll actually be more keen.
I mean, I think that's it as well for mobile is like a lower time investment, you know? I mean, obviously if you're playing on PC and you're playing for like 8 hours or something, you're probably not going to do that on your mobile phone. So I think it's also about, you know, creating titles that are actually suited to the platform and the way that people engage with that platform.
It's going to be super fast, right?
And shorter sessions. I think, the way that you engage that platform is very different. And if you want your title to succeed there, you have to keep those things in mind as well. You know, it's, I don't think it's about like replacing PC. I think it's about a different kind of gaming experience. So.
Sure. Very, very cool. And you were talking about the subgenres that you guys are looking at. Obviously, I'm not going to push you for more insight around those, but one of the awesome things about this industry when you're looking at the esports side of gaming is that you know, you can't build a football or rugby or boxing in the course of a year. That has to kind of grow slowly through like a local community until it gets accepted by a national league and gets a ton of investment. I was on a sports podcast last week at just about the same time as the announcement of my role with Infinite. And
congratulations.
Thank you. and we were talking about how there are lots of similarities between the kind of last 2 years in esports with all the investment that's rolled in and kind of rugby union in the early 90s, where it just out of nowhere just really started to skyrocket and get a massive amount of investment globally, and now it's, you know, one of those top tier premier sports. So one of the things, like one of the luxuries that we have, and it's actually like a massive positive for Space Ape, I assume, is that you can really actually do a lot of research on what people like and actually build something that's 100% new, or at least takes some new ideas from a few other different places and kind of puts it in the right place for people. I would say that like a MOBA, probably, you know, that's a very overserved industry, or an overserviced vertical in mobile and in PC titles. So, and obviously it's a lot longer than all other titles. So I'm very curious to see what comes out over the course of the last, like, over the next 2 years, and what kind of grabs people's attention.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. I mean, I think for us as well, it's, you know, we don't want to make a mobile for mobile. That's not really our aim. Like, we're looking to be more accessible as well. So you'll see that reflected in the title and in the branding for the title and the art for the title, you know, the characters, all of that. So yeah, no, we're really excited. It's been really interesting to see, actually, even within our company, it's been a title that just, like, everybody's been so excited about, you know, because we have internal playtests and things as well. Sure. And just everybody gets really, just really excited about, like, that competition and making teams. And I think it was one of the first titles here where just everybody got on board, you know, no matter what you're into, no matter if you're a girl, if you're a boy, if you like hardcore, if you like more casual. I don't know. There's something about this game that just kind of brought everybody together, which is really, really cool.
That's sweet.
And I think that will translate, yeah.
I'm going to pester you for a beta key whenever it's ready to go.
Sure.
Following on from the education piece that we're talking about with the digital schoolhouse, this has always been something that's been super close to my heart with like, I got a massive amount of satisfaction with teaching kids martial arts and going over to Minnesota just for like 3 months when I was 21 to go and teach American kids how to swim.
I used to be a camp counselor when I was a teen. I used to teach kids swimming as well.
Really? Oh my God.
Yeah. It was just like weirdly fulfilling.
Yeah, it is. Great. I mean, like, there are certain moments when you start to rage at just how frustrating some kids be, but at the same time, very satisfying. Anyway, so as an extension of the education stuff, which is something that's quite close to my heart and what I'm really excited about doing it at a business level with a bunch of non-endemic brands with Infinite, it takes us on to the Varsity Masterclass. How did you come about with building one, actually coming up with the idea of partnering with some of the best universities in London to do this? What's the kind of plan? What's the long-term aim? And where does esports really fit into this over the next few years?
Sure. So I guess, I sort of started thinking about this program because I'm quite passionate about education, and like I said, like I work with like a literacy group as well, and there's something about like kids and young people that is just, it's like it's inspiring, right? Like, they come up with ideas that you would never have. They're like open and unafraid, and it's really cool to see how much they can change even within like one session or something. And if you can have like a tiny part in that, like, why wouldn't you? And so I think it was that I was doing already, and then a little bit of that digital schoolhouse, an infectiousness, it's not a word, and then also like the esports side, and then somehow there's just a crossover. I mean, the idea of varsity esports is huge in the States. I mean, you have things like NACE, like the National Association for Collegiate Esports, which I think have up to like 70 or maybe more of the member institutions now, where kids will actually get scholarships to go play professionally at a university in esport. So I think when it comes, like, that in the States is not a novel idea. Maybe in the UK it is, right? But I think along with that, obviously the root of all that has to be education, no matter if you're going to play at a school professionally, like you're going to play at a university, and universities are about education. And I don't know, I think something for me sort of clicked in for us as a company to be able to like support people who are looking for careers in games, who are maybe studying game design, studying game development, computer science, whatever, or people who may not have even thought of gaming as a career, because I know I didn't before I really got into it and ended up loving it. So, these people in university are going to be like the future leaders of our industry, and if we can support them somehow, then that would be really cool. So I think there is like the educational component and then like the esports component potentially later down the line. But for now, really, it's just about sharing our knowledge. Like, we have so many talented people working here, and it's almost like a shame if we can't share that with people who might want access to that. So that's sort of how, like a long rambling explanation. That's sort of how the idea came about. It was just like combining a few different passions of mine and being like, hey, I wonder if people would be interested, you know?
And plus it always makes sense to kind of have Space 8 be the first name of London organizations that anyone would think of to get involved with mobile gaming. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, for sure. And then I just started hitting up universities that, you know, I thought might be cool to partner with. And we already had some ties with University of Greenwich as well, because they do like Unity events in our office sometimes. And UCL, I know, is, you know, obviously one of the top universities in the country, and also have like a really big esports following. So I was like, oh, people here would love to hear about, you know, gaming and games and that kind of thing. And they were both super keen. Originally, I was just going to do one university, but they were both super keen. I was like, awesome, let's just do both of them. Yeah, so we have slightly different tracks at both universities because they sort of cater to a different demographic a little bit. So the University of Greenwich is mostly focused around game development, and then UCL is focused around competitive play. That still encompasses things like game design and gaming careers. It's just slightly more focused on like that community side as well. And yeah, we hold them every Monday and Tuesday until March 20th. Mondays is always Greenwich at 6 p.m. GMT, and then Tuesdays is always UCL at 5 p.m. GMT. Yeah, and then on March 20th, we plan to hold like a big social for all the students as well in our studio. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. It's one of the questions that I always get asked by people that reach out to me to get some advice is how do I get into the games industry? Like how do I get into esports? Whether it's someone who is super junior and is just out of university and just wants to follow an area of their passion, or if it's a more senior person that's just looking to get involved in the space. So any and all activities that provide a like more clarity around that, or just build a sense of association between like awesome companies and passionate people is always going to be great. And it kind of, you can extrapolate that into esports at a wider level too, with there's a massive need for cool regional, national and international infrastructures to be built through education, be that with high schools or universities or just in the local towns and cities, to allow one, the fans, to meet people and learn from each other and spend time with those that share the same passion as theirs, but also to provide like a really clear path to pro for players and for those that want to get in the business side alike. It's so hard. It's the esports side of things is so top heavy that like a lot of the times I'm speaking with people that have had to hold down a full-time job in something that they're not super passionate about, but they're still running, you know, esports tournaments at the weekend, or are building websites or all that sort of thing, or always making content. And it's really hard work to get noticed. So the Varsity Masterclass is a good thing. And I hope to see more of those. And I'm sure that these happen in other industries already, but it's just great to see it happening in ours.
Yeah, no, we're really, obviously, really excited. And yeah, so we're starting with 6 sessions, but I could easily see it expanding out to more, because there are lots of different disciplines obviously within the games industry.
Like recruitment,
that, for example, that you could touch on. We've already had, you know, some people asking like, hey, are you going to do something around like art in games? And I was like, why not, you know? And I've already had different universities hit me up and say, hey, would you do something like this at our university? I'm like, yes. So, yeah, if you're in a university or educational institution and you're keen on partnering with us, that's definitely something to consider. If you want to shoot out an email to varsity@space8games.com, then I will pick it up.
Awesome.
So, yeah, definitely looking to expand out and potentially even include, you know, other members of the industry to speak. I don't think it always has to be people from here necessarily. So yeah, who knows where it could go. And eventually later on down the line, if we end up creating like a varsity league as well for one of our titles, that could tie in as well. So We'll see where it goes.
Very, very, very exciting.
Yeah.
So the last thing that I wanted to ask you before we get on to closing out the show was about how the production and scale of mobile esports events actually comes off. Have you had much experience attending any of these live? Because some of the time, like especially for the Clash Royale series, like the stage was amazing.
It was incredible.
But I feel like the viewing experience and just the focus on the players still looking down at tiny machines just doesn't have that kind of grand sense that I get from, say, being at IEM Katowice at the start of March when it's, you know...
Yeah, it's mad.
Thousands
of
people.
Yeah, last year was crazy. With some
amazing APIs for all the stage and that sort of thing. So, yeah, what's your thoughts on that?
So you mean like the live productions of mobile versus
like what,
PC?
Yeah, like what in your mind could be done differently to make that better?
I don't know if it's necessarily just about making it better. Like, I think it's also just exposure, because we're used to seeing PC titles in those like massive arenas. Like, we're used to seeing that now, so it doesn't seem bizarre to us. I'm sure the first time it happened, it was like, oh, I don't know about this. Whereas with mobile, like, it's just starting in the last couple of years, right? Like, I've been to some Vainglory tournaments as well, and yeah, like, maybe it's a bit like the concept seems a bit strange or something, but realistically, I think it's just because it's new. I think as it happens more and more, you're probably going to start to focus less on what the players are holding in their hands and more about what they're doing in the game.
Sure.
So I think it's just because it's a novelty. I think that's why. Like, the man, that production that Supercell put on, that was insane.
Yeah,
it was crazy with the fire and the, you know, like, it was... And I've been to Cologne as well, and to Katowice. Like, the things are spectacular. But it was really cool to see a mobile title just produce something so grand. It was very, very cool. And I thought the way they had you know, all the different countries represented with different commentators and stuff was really well done. The way they had the players sort of, you know, some of them are really young, so then they had their moms walk them off. I'm like, I don't know, there's something really cool about all of that. And like the age range that you saw, I think that's something quite unique to mobile as well. You know, you had players who were like 16, 17 competing with people who were like 30. So yeah. I think that's cool as well in mobile. Like, there's not really like a target demographic. It's like anybody can join. So I thought that was neat. But yeah, how that'll expand, we'll see. I think it's just because it's new, so it's a bit weird to see, but I think we'll get used to it, to be honest.
No, that's fair. And like anything that opens up the demographic to getting more people involved in...
Mm-hmm. Like, that being said, I don't think all esports has to be this...
millennial like, slice.
No, like the super polished looking sports desk feel, you know, I mean, like, it is games also, like, we're playing games, and I think there can be something more just like approachable and casual. Like, I don't think you need people like in suits and ties talk, but, you know, like, I think that will have different things sort of start to branch off of that are not just all like one size fits all. I think it'll start to look different as well. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, when the scale of the event starts getting larger, I can completely understand why certain PC titles would want to kind of replicate their professionalism that is demonstrated elsewhere.
It like speaks to like a credibility, right?
Yeah,
but I don't think
yeah.
all games will need to follow that example.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. Well, that's about all the time that we have for this show, so thank you very much for jumping on. I've got one or two rapid-fire questions just to drop on you before we go.
Cool. Drop them. And then I rambled too much. Please cut it out.
No, it's okay. So the first one is, Deb, who or what has been your biggest source of inspiration and being a mentor to you in the games industry, and what's the best piece of advice that you've received?
Okay, this is just the games industry, let me think.
You can go wider on life if you want as well, that's fine, as long as it kind of circles back to gaming, I'm fine with
that. Yeah, I gotcha. All right, I'll try to be quick. I think as far as like mentorship and best advice, my best friend and colleague here at Spaceit, his name's Mark, he's our cinematics director, and he taught me so much just about grace and being the bigger person, and that translates to work and life, so he's definitely been a main one. My other one is my old boss at Xbox, James Shepard, and he said something which has like always stayed with me, and he said there are two kinds of people, and he said there are people who want the house by the lake, and there are people who want to create something, and I don't know. For me, like, just money has never been a goal. Like, if I'm not doing something I love, then I don't want to do it. Like, it's just, and I think if that is your focus, you'll never really create something great. I think great things, like the byproduct of great things might be financial success, but I just think if you're setting out for financial success, that's never the right way to go.
Yeah. I actually 100% agree with that.
Yeah.
I didn't ever expect to be this motivated to do everything like around the business development side. Like when I was at university, I was much more kind of leftward leaning and establishment man and and I would rather have just gone and done more times at camp in the summer. But I don't know. Like once you fall into something that inspires you, then you kind of just work out the best abilities or best aspects of your personality that I think can can maximize that and see where it takes you. So yeah, I feel you.
For sure.
Cool. Esports and gaming is pretty notorious for being hard on the work-life balance. What do you do to maintain a healthy professional lifestyle?
My work-life balance. I don't think it's always possible, but I would say do something that you love. Like, I'm really lucky because I'm passionate about the things I work on, so that means that it doesn't always feel like work. It doesn't feel like a chore. I'm not looking at the clock waiting to see when I can go home, you know? I think that's really important. But other than that, like, I think it's really important to have an identity that's not defined by your career. So, like, just like a belief in something bigger than yourself, you know, like that way that you don't end up compromising who you are or the people you love for what you do. So I think you need to know who you are without your job, without your career, and then you'll be fine.
That's
huge.
You'll be able
to prioritize properly if you have that. Yeah.
That is absolutely huge. It's quite easy to get kind of sucked up into the energy of everything that's going on and start maybe readjust your priorities when you don't have to. Building my own business, I have had to take a good look at how I've prioritized certain people, and sometimes those conversations aren't particularly pleasant just because I've been so bitter, caught up in the hurricane of damn, I need to make sure that I can still, you know, pay my rent in the next few months. So that is probably one of the better pieces of advice that I've heard on this since we started this part of the rapid fire round.
I'm glad.
Last thing is, what's a unique thing about you that we don't know?
A unique thing about me you don't know. I have like a few random ones.
You could pick one.
I have to just pick one.
Yeah.
Okay, this is the most timely one.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the best, but it's the most timely. I've had Kendrick's All the Stars on repeat for the last 2 weeks, probably. If you don't know what that is, go see Black Panther. Oh my gosh. I think I probably like secretly hope I'm going to find the Wakanda tattoo on the inside of my mouth so I can like go and check it out and hang with him.
I still haven't seen it yet, but media source
that it really I follow
is like, this is one of the best films that I've ever seen. And
I mean,
Panther is like rewriting, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so it's quite big.
And the soundtrack is killer. It's so good. So, yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I haven't listened or watched it yet, but I'll
at least get to listen that. To All the Stars. Just listen to it. You won't be able to stop.
Okay. Awesome. All right, Deb. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Sports Roundtable. Thank you very much for jumping on the show with us. How can everyone reach out to you if they want to get in touch?
You can reach out to me on Twitter. I'm at Deb Mensah-Bonsu. And like I said earlier, if you're keen on getting involved in our varsity program, then shoot an email to varsity@spaceapegames.com.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, hopefully in the next few episodes, I'll be bringing you a little bit more insight about what is I'm actually going to be doing in the US, but it's just not the right time right now. But Deb, thank you very much for jumping on the show. And for everyone else, we will speak to you soon. Cheers.
Sounds good. See you.